This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Hey, I'm Brian Hyatt, and this is Rolling Stone Music Now. We usually do one topic for each show. Once in a while, we do more than one. Today, we're going to split it up. In the second half of the show, we're going to talk a little bit about Radiohead versus Lana Del Rey, the battle of the century. That may not be a battle at all and may be completely overblown and everyone can't stop talking about it anyway. But first, it would have been Clarence Clemons' 76th birthday this week. The great E Street Band saxophonist died in 2011. And just a couple months before his death, our own Andy Green talked to Clarence. Clarence had just done something that he was very excited about, which is he had recorded with Lady Gaga. And I had done a Lady Gaga cover story just around the time, and Gaga herself was incredibly excited about this. She called up Clarence, or had her people call him, and just basically summoned him to the studio, and he magically appeared that night from Miami. So let's hear what Clarence Clemons had to say to Andy Green in 2011, just a couple months before his death. And afterwards, we will talk about Radiohead and Lana Del Rey.
I hear you play the new Gaga album.
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
I'm a Gagaite. They called me up. Lady Gaga wants you to play on her album. I said, wow. And I'm here in Florida. I live in Florida. And this was on a Friday afternoon. So I said, okay, yeah, I'm glad to do it, you know. But what do you want me to do? Like next week, Tuesday, Monday or Tuesday is okay. He said, no, she needs you now. Yes, sir, I'm only there for it. That was kind of funny, you know, the man is, flying to New York and that same night, to the same day. Anyway, just the idea of this whole thing was so wild and I was so excited, you know, because man, she is like, she is it. And all the things I thought about her, I was right. She's a genius.
So you get to the studio and she's there?
As fast as I got there, close to midnight.
Mm-hmm.
11:30, something like that. And, walked to the studio, she came running down the hall. Yeah. Oh, shit. That was holy shit, man. Damn. It was really, she's really a great person. I had so much fun, just had so much fun.
And so what'd she tell you about the song?
Yeah, she explained the song, where it came from, what she was trying to say in the song, and it made so much sense, and what she does, man, it just blows my mind. The fact that I was asked to play on her album is just one of the greatest things that ever happened in my life,
Wow.
I really am. I was a real fan of her approach to what she's saying. And while all the things that some people see as crazy, it makes so much sense, And she's just a great, great person. When I left the studio, it took me a few days to calm down, man. I was like, just being witness to what she's saying and what she's doing and how she's getting there is just amazing.
And so how's your health these days, Clarence?
Yeah, I had spinal surgery. I had two. I had both my knees replaced. I had spinal fusion and from L2 to L5. And a lip on the left side, and I did a lot, man. A lot of things happened.
The spinal surgery is the most recent one.
Yeah, well, the spinal surgery and the knee replacements both happened in last year.
So your knees were replaced before, right?
I had hips replaced before.
Oh, okay, with your knees.
I've had all kinds of replacements. know. But you know, it's it hasn't held it back. It hasn't held me back. You know, it's just like everything that's happened has happened at the right time, and the timing was perfect. So it didn't interfere with a lot of my other stuff that was going on in my life.
Uh-huh.
You know, see, it's like when I had the surgery done, I knew I'd have to do it because the last tour, the end of the last tour, was hell, man. It was pure hell. But you know, at the same time, it was wonderful. It was beautiful for me. I had such you know, and then something having to have been played with two of the greatest people, two of the greatest musicians, or two of the greatest artists, and being a part of their lives is a beautiful thing, man. I can't tell you. Although I had all these problems, it didn't hold me back.
Uh-huh.
It just made me stronger and work hard. I'm in physical therapy for the last year, 3 days a week, working my ass off, man, to get back to this. And the music that I've been involved in since surgeries has really helped me hold it together, and it has helped me to be stronger, and because of my love for what I do.
Hey, so are there more surgeries planned, or are you done?
I don't know what else we can do. I don't know what else is left to do to replace that.
Uh-huh.
So, but, whatever it takes to do what I have to do, I'll do it.
Are you walking better now? I mean,
it's a cane, the crutches. Now I'm having some hip problems again. I don't know why. But you know, it hasn't stopped me from playing my music. You know, as long as my mouth and my hands and my brain still works, I'll be out there doing it, man.
I've heard some talk of a 2012 E Street Band tour. Is that something you know anything about?
No, but I do believe that could be true. It may be true. I don't know. There's always rumors about stuff around Bruce. And it's always pretty true, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to the music, and because of what the band's doing, and when we're going to do it again, how we're going to do it again. Yes, we'll do it again. I always say that. Yes, I think we'll do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Because these things are too good to just come in. It's like when they decided to break the band up back in those days, before my hair. Beforehand. B-H. B-B-B-B-H. Bruce before hair. You know, so, I think that we'll do it again. But then there's a thing, and then after that, Donna decides to go out, you know. That would be, you know, or vice versa, you know. I don't know if he could hold me down on the ground, man. I'd be floating so high. If I could do both of these things, if both of them came to pass, you know, say like in the same year, the same 2 years or whatever.
Yeah.
It would just be, I don't know, my feet even think like that. It's so crazy, but it would be really great. I really love something like the one thing I would love to do.
So,
I have a chance to go out with both of them.
So you turn 70 next year. I mean, do you see any do you see any moment that you would stop touring or anything, or it's just going to keep going?
It'll keep going until I'm not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's keeping me alive. This is keeping me feel young and inspired, because I'm doing something that my spiritual teacher, Sri Shinwai, told me that my purpose in life is to bring joy and light to the world.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know any better way to do it than what I'm doing now.
I have got a few random fan questions, if you don't mind.
Okay. I'll try my best.
Okay, well, the fans are fascinated by the Nebraska album and whether or not the full band tried to record those songs.
No, I think when Bruce brings the band in on the music, he knows what he wants, and he knows what he hears, and it's placed where he wants it to be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a matter of try and make it fit. It fits naturally or it doesn't have.
Right, so the band did not try to record those songs as a full band?
No, as a full band, I don't think so, no.
So you record the song Born to Run, and then Boom and Davey quit the band. Now, tell me your reaction to that at the time. Did you think they were crazy for like quitting?
Yeah, I did. And the way it went down, it just blew my mind. We were playing at the Basement in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the show, Bruce told me that they were, Davey and Boom were leaving. I thought they meant to say good night, they're going to go home or something, you know. Because Ernest was living with me at the time. You know, he was living in my house, and he never told me they were going to leave. He never told me anything about it. I had no idea that, you know, and I cooked for him every day. And, you know, I don't know, I was just taken back. We had got pretty close, and I thought, you know, that he would have said something to me about it. Or even they had the idea of doing it. You know, I had no idea that they were even thinking about doing that.
Yeah.
So it just came as a big shock and a very big disappointment. And I was just in a way.
Okay. I have a 2002 tour rider here, and it says at 9:45 a whole roast chicken is to be brought to your dressing room in the middle of the show. Is that something they did back then?
No.
No?
But I did have my dinner after the show.
Okay, but not during, not in the middle of it, right?
No. Gee, we never had time to eat. I guess we had time to stop and eat.
Right.
It's funny to think about.
Yeah, it's so absurd, right? Yeah,
evidently, this person never saw the band play. They never saw what we did on stage, because there's no way that could have happened.
Right. Yeah, you're right, it's preposterous. Why do you think Bruce recorded so many albums and then just shelved them back in the day?
Well, he had these expressions he wanted to make. And we were at a point that we couldn't be in the studio, but he was still writing, you know. And so I think he just says, well, if I create it, a song ain't a song until somebody hears it, you know. Even if you don't put it out, you got it there. Somebody heard it. And other people are thinking about it, like you thinking about it. So I think he just, he's a prolific writer, you know, and people who know about this kind of thing, they understand why he writes so much, and so you know, put it down, make sure you got it, so you always come back and get it if you need it, or there are parts of what song they may need for something coming down the road, or something that's so great you don't want to forget it or lose it. So then it becomes, like I said before, it ain't a song until somebody hears it. It's just a thought.
Mm-hmm.
If you write it and you put it on the tape, you know, it's a song.
Right. And you almost played for the Cleveland Browns, right? I mean, that's...
Almost. I was going there as a free agent, you know, as a trial for the team. My best friend who I was in college with, he's 2 years ahead of me, is Charlie Holmes. He was one of the greatest running backs that I had ever seen. That's even up to today. He's still one of the greatest running backs I've ever met. Mm-hmm. And I was living in Philadelphia, and we were. He took me out to go come down and try out his team up there, the Jersey Generals. So I was in Newark Bears. I was in Newark Bears at the time, and I went down and tried out for the team. And I was a car accident, and that knocked me out of football, and so I never had a chance to really try out for the team, but I knew I could have made it, but the doctors thought it would be a good idea, because, you know, there should be something wrong with you, you know, and it was just in the beginning of the season, and then I was in top physical condition. I mean, if it happened to me today, I'd be dead already. But, you know, I was ready to you know, Sean and I used to work out together, and became even closer friends, and he asked asked me about the, why I want to come and try this job out. First, there was a job, he was a supervisor at the Journey Training School for Boys. It's a reform school kind of setting. Mm-hmm. And my minor was sociology. So anyway, I found this job with him. Then after that came the football. The team was, in New Brunswick. They were trying out people there. And I went, he says, well, why don't you come and try out for that team? I thought I would, I did, and, but I didn't get a chance to play.
And do you ever think about how your life might have been different if you didn't wind up in that car accident? I mean,
well, yeah, it would have been a lot different. That's why some things that happened in your past that you can't understand why it happened, but it happened for a reason. Things happened in your life for a reason, and if you're wise enough to see it and understand it. It makes your life a lot easier instead of a lot of people complaining about shit all the time and yada, 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 yada. But they all happen for reasons. And if you just accept what's happening and play the hand that you dealt, you know, you got to play the hand that you dealt. And then at the end, you'll see that what you decided to do was probably the right thing. You know, I never thought I'd be, quote rock and roll star. I just pursued that. I just love to play. Mm-hmm. And then I met Bruce right after this car accident. You know, after that, I always had my horn in the car because I like to play. And I would stop and play with bands. In my book, I tell a little story about how the part of it saw, how it all came about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Anyway, I don't keep you. I have one final question though. In the mid '80s, both you and Bruce, you're both very, very strong. So who could have bench pressed more back then? Do you think in the mid '80s you were Bruce?
Me.
You definitely.
Yeah. That was out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if I can do it now, though.
Right, now. He's pretty strong now. Okay, Clarence, it was so good talking to you. Thank you so much. This was fascinating.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you.
Bye.
That was the late Clarence Clemons talking to Andy Green just a couple months before his death. And to switch gears entirely, I want to talk about a big controversy in the music industry, Lana Del Rey versus Radiohead. And to talk about it, we have in the studio Brittany Spanos. Hey, Brittany.
Hey.
And Andy Green. Hey, Andy.
Hi, hi, Brian.
So it started with reports in a British tabloid that there was an impending legal battle between Lana Del Rey and Radiohead over similarities between her song, Get Free, and Radiohead's first hit, Creep. And in fact, just to give you an idea, someone made a mashup. They used the instrumental of Creep and put the vocal of Lana's song over it. And maybe we can hear that to get a sense of the potential problem here. So it's now turned out that Radiohead has not sued Lana Del Rey. It also turns out that the people behind the legal negotiations are Radiohead's music publisher, which might seem like a distinction without a difference, but it does mean that this isn't, you know, Tom York sitting conferring with his personal lawyer trying to sue Lana Del Rey, which a lot of people kind of assumed. And then there's a complication with Creep, but we'll get into that in a second. What I wanted to talk about first, Brittany, was what this says about the way the internet is kind of absorbing music news right now, whether it's completely accurate or not, and also what this says about the way that Lana and Radiohead are perceived. What do you make of all this?
I mean, it was really interesting to see what happened after Lana tweeted about it. And I feel like she's an artist who has a very very, very large, very
fervent,
very intense fandom on the internet that kind of came at all sides to attack Radiohead in this, because she had also tweeted that it was 100% of the song rights that Radiohead was trying to sue her for.
They would accept nothing else, is yes. what she kind of suggested, yeah.
And as we've learned over the last week, that was false, and that it's actually not even a formal claim has been made, I don't think, and it's also not 100% at all. So it's interesting to see how the sort of younger fandom, Lana Del Rey's fandom, kind of came to attack Radiohead and Radiohead's sort of ethos and their entire being behind going for this lawsuit. And it was just the way that it was consumed and was happening so quickly is that everyone kind of took that one tweet from Lana without any sort of claim out there by Radiohead, without any sort of legal documentation to back it up, and how it all of a sudden became like this huge, immense war that really wasn't or yeah. is.
Yeah, and this broke on a Sunday night when you can't mm-hmm. get comment from people, really, and websites, they may not have like their full team going. And it seems to be verifiable that if she says that she's being sued, that she's being sued, and then you go with it. Because if you don't go with it, then somebody else will, and they'll get all the clicks. So it's this race to post a story that often happens without taking a step back to be like, wait a minute, is this real?
Brittany, I don't get the sense that you're a huge Radiohead fan yourself. You're not a huge Radiohead yourself. That's what they call the fans, you know, the Radioheads. but that aside, it does seem like, especially Lana's young fans, some might not be rock fans. How do you think, what is the most kind of hilariously caricatured way you could describe the way they see Radiohead?
I would say with Lana in particular as a pop star, she has sort of an interesting relationship with rock music in general because she is such a huge fan and she borrows so much from it. But I feel like there's obviously this image that a band like Radiohead is sort of like grumpy. I mean, Tom York just like looks grumpy all the time. Like just like sort of a grumpy old rock band, even though they're not really like super old rock band, but I think that people, the younger fans, sort of have that image. And they're kind of playing it up. And there was actually, fans have been starting to bring, like, Lust for Life vinyl records to Tom York. Like, there was a video of fans, like, trying to get him to sign it now. So they're sort of trying to, like, make him even grumpier now.
Well, that's the funny thing. And that's actually why I hesitated when I said that Lana fans might not be rock fans. Because, as I know from my own time with her, just in general, I mean, she's an enormous rock mm-hmm. fan. And she probably, all the references she made when we spoke were to rock, not pop at all.
Right.
And of course, worked with Dan Auerbach and et cetera, et cetera. But also, like, she talks about, like, Guns N' Roses and Springsteen. In fact, she's, like, a total classic rock fan.
She's supposed to have Lou Reed on Brooklyn
exactly,
Baby.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, as we know, artists are in one place with their tastes and their influences and their kind of aesthetic framework, and then their fans might be in a totally
yeah,
other
just
place.
Sort of a filter for that. But I think that there is definitely a disconnect between that. And I feel like just because of the anger of her tweet and the sort of intensity of her claims that it was 100%, it definitely fueled the fans to feel a little bit more negative and build up a lot of stereotypes of what Radiohead represents.
Yes, which was smart for her. It was smart for her to go first to like frame the issue, to be like, look, I'm very willing to like compromise here, but they aren't.
Mm-hmm. She specified 40%, which is very funny.
Yes.
It is interesting. I mean, I think the reason she's willing to settle is because, look, it's melody and chords.
Yeah.
And that, not the entire song, but that one section we heard and a little bit more, and it gets even a little bit more similar. And, you know, she may even to herself admit that it was an unconscious influence, which is extremely common.
Right.
That is a thing that it's just, and sometimes inevitable. She also said in concert, that was the other thing that went around, a little clip of her saying in concert that she might just leave the song off future versions of the album,
yeah.
which I'm not sure that
a
like solves
dramatic.
Everything. No, it's very Lana.
Well, and, you know, it is too late for that. It's been released.
I know.
It's a very common thing that these things happen and it is dealt with behind the scenes and you never hear about it, that rights are constantly shared and both parties stay silent and it's not a big media storm.
Right. Well, let's get into the other story behind Creep and the sort of irony of this issue, which is that Radiohead themselves were, and I'm a little unclear about how this came to be, but I believe there was a quiet, it might be the same situation. I'm not sure if there was an actual lawsuit or just a legal
I'm
approach behind the scenes.
I'm 99% sure that there was no lawsuit, that it was just settled.
So here's the deal. Creep sounds an awful lot like a song by the Hollies.
Yeah, it's called The Air That I Breathe, which was not written by the Hollies. It was written by these guys, Albert Hammond and Mike Hazelwood. It is Albert Hammond Sr., and Jr. is the guitarist in the Strokes.
It's a very small world. In other words, the Hammond family was involved with a weirdly large percentage of 90s and 2000s rock songs. But let's hear the air that I breathe for a moment.
If I could make a wish, I think I'd pass. Can't think of
any. I think the only way to solve this is to have the Hollies, Radiohead, and Lana all perform together at the Grammys. I think it would really be great. But there's a couple things. I think Radiohead are not super happy about this fact that they share credit for the song with these two people. They've never talked about much, and I actually think might be a hidden factor in their own resentment of the song, which they play only on and off.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so many reasons that they resented,
but a hidden factor.
But they don't want their breakthrough song that launched their entire career to be seen as stolen. So when this came up, it was handled very quickly and very quietly.
Stolen as with Lana is way too strong.
Sorry,
It's just too easy.
If anyone's inspired.
Or unconsciously inspired, that chord change, which I think is the famous G to B chord change. I'm not sure. I'd have to sit down with the guitar, but it's like a very extremely distinct and unusual chord change. And on top of that, the melody. Mm-hmm. But if you're a musician, musicians can hear this stuff and even the chord change absorb in their head. And then when they're sitting down to write, be like, that sounds good, and not realize until the album's out. And that could very well be the case with both Lana and Radiohead. Mm-hmm. But what I was going to say is, it's a complicating factor. It's a complicating factor because, thanks to the miracle of the internet, Lana fans learned this fact very quickly and used it to paint Radiohead as hypocrites, which would be true if Radiohead themselves were aggressively pursuing this, which we don't know. We don't actually even know whether they have control over this action, because Andy points out that, let's take a step back. There was a case in which Tom Petty's publishing company got involved with Sam Smith's publishing company over Tom Petty's Won't Back Down and Sam Smith's Stay With Me. Mm-hmm. Because that is just, I won't even bother playing it. It's just a blatant, the Sam Smith chorus is just a slowed down version of Tom Petty. They were totally screwed. But everyone was like, Tom Petty is suing Sam Smith. But it turned out very similarly. Tom Petty wrote that song with Jeff Lynne, and it turned out it was Jeff Lynne's publishing company that actually initiated the action. And so Tom Petty was like, you know, it's fine with me. I don't know. It was complicated. And this may be a similar case, although in that case, that was an actual collaboration between Tom Petty and Jeff Lynne rather than a bizarre, decades separated alleged plagiarism. So you have to wonder about that. So Brittany, yeah, you don't like Radiohead. You're not a Radiohead, as we decided that's what Radiohead fans are called.
I don't hate Radiohead. I think they're okay.
What do they symbolize in your mind?
I'm not going to roast them too hard right now. I think they're like pseudo-intellectual rock.
Mm-hmm. That's weird. So you're like the Gallagher brothers, who call them bloody students. You think they're bloody students. That's what you don't like about Radiohead.
That's the Liam and Noel Gallagher of Rolling Stone.
And do their fans bother you? Because their fans are so intense and they get pretty annoying sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. But not as, I don't know, not as intense as a lot of other fandoms. I don't find Radiohead fans to be like insufferable people.
But in general, again, it's been defining for Radiohead. And this is one of those weird things that people don't think about as far as the way things change. You can be known for one weird thing.
Right.
I mean, Metallica became known as like just the band who sued Napster to a large number of people, which is, you know, kind of funny because obviously there's a lot of other things about them. So do you think for certain young people, Radiohead are now just, they're known primarily for a thing they didn't even do?
I think that's definitely the case. That's going to be the case now. And I feel like what my thing with Radiohead that I've always consumed them and always known about them is that they hate Creep, which is a song that I really love. And so I never can trust a band that hates their biggest song.
I discussed this with Tom, and he gave me a very nuanced view on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, explain that, yeah.
He said that he sees it now as sort of their entry pass to the world of pop, and he's sort of proud of it now. I think for years he did resent it, but they play it in concert now, and he told me that he's really learned to like it.
Yeah.
I think with Radiohead that they've done nothing in a long time to appeal outside of their fan base. That they made no effort to appeal to a mainstream audience. They don't do many interviews. Their music is just sort of released and there's not a big buildup to it. That you're in the cult, which is huge, or they're just like some old band.
To be fair, they did do an interview this year and it was with you, Andy Green, for the cover of Rolling Stone for the re-release of OK Computer.
I'm very happy they did that. They're my favorite band from the top five or whatever. I love them. But I'm just saying that if I was much younger, I would not have been exposed to them, really.
So there is a long history to this. The game was changed by our friend Robin Thicke, who musicians of all stripes are really angry with Robin Thicke, and not just because they don't like his music and think that Blurred Lines is problematic. You know, they're mad at him because there was a case over Blurred Lines. And what happened in that case, Andy?
The notion is that he was found guilty of stealing the song, but it was more the vibe of the song than an actual, like a strong melody or anything that Eddie took.
Yeah, so the estate of Marvin Gaye sued Robin Thicke, and usually the requirement has to be that it's the actual chords and melody has to be taken. In other words, that you can do it off the sheet music, mm-hmm. not the recordings, which means that you can't be accused of stealing a groove, you can't be accused of stealing a vibe. But in this particular case, there's a song called Got to Give It Up, and which is a great song, a hell of a lot better than the Robin Thicke song. And it has an extremely similar vibe and groove to the Robin Thicke song Blurred Lines. And in fact, I believe they admitted to basing the vibe off that song. And they were found guilty of copyright infringement. And by the way, Pharrell actually wrote the song, in which Robin Thicke, in a hilarious courtroom moment, admitted that in interviews, including with people like me, when he just like, oh yeah, I wrote it in 30 minutes, that was a lie. He just wanted to sound cool. He didn't want to be not associated with his greatest hit. And in fact, Pharrell wrote it. But in any case, they set this precedent that completely terrified every songwriter alive and every musician alive, because if you can be found guilty of taking a vibe and a groove, that means, first of all, there's a million existing songs that suddenly are liable for a lawsuit, and second of all, it can be really stifling in the studio. So there's actually an appeal going on, and all sorts of musicians have filed an amicus brief, because it's not about supporting Robin Thicke, no one likes him, but it is just a scary precedent for these musicians. However, you know, this Lana and Radiohead is a much more traditional, no change in law would need to take place for that to be a problem.
For a lot of these cases, I feel like because the artists get so embarrassed by the entire possibility that they plagiarized a song that becomes a huge hit in most of these cases, they typically are very quick to hand over some rights. So I think Ed Sheeran was pretty quick to give rights to the writers.
Yeah, I think that the lesson of Robin Thicke was don't throw this to a jury, mm-hmm. because they could do something crazy and it's just not worth the risk.
And then an example of preemptive handling of this issue is Taylor Swift. She credited Right Said Fred for Look What You Made Me Do. I mean, not 100%, but mm-hmm. threw them some credit, because there is a similarity in the sort of chanted chorus. And then the solution is simple. Just give them some of the publishing preemptively. And while it's presented as a sort of gift, it's possible that they went to the Right Said Fred camp and said, look, we have this. Here's our offer.
Right.
And then they bumped it up by 5%, and they just worked it out, and then everyone's happy, and then it becomes Right Said Fred can come out and be like, it's so great that Taylor Swift played tribute to us on this yeah. song.
They got a lot of press out of it.
Right, they got a lot of press out of it. And then that's how it's presented, as if it was, you know, yeah. sort of an homage, which, it, yeah. by the way, it could be, because Taylor is not doing any interviews. Come on, Taylor. We want to talk to you. Taylor is not doing interviews. We don't actually know. It could have been. She'd be like, wouldn't it be funny to do an I'm too sexy thing? My guess is that wasn't it, but who knows?
Yeah,
and by going preemptive, you avoid what happened with Gaga Madonna, where the first day reaction to a big new song is just, it's been stolen, which sort of, it sullies the entire release of a big single.
You're absolutely right. The PR for that was handled, as Bernie was saying, is let Right Said Fred come out yeah. and, you know, take credit.
Was the Madonna Gaga, did that ever go anywhere?
No.
I know Madonna played with it a lot.
Yeah, she played with it, but I remember on Twitter and everything, because there's a huge buildup to, like, Born This Way. On her Twitter, it was like 5 days, now it's 4 days, and the song came out. Then just instantly, it was people screaming that it was just like Madonna.
Yeah, by Madonna's Express Yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the thing there, Madonna never initiated or even mentioned legal action. I think it actually falls into the vibe groove category.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think the chord progression is similar, but not really the melody, not enough. It's yeah. it's just the tempo, the vibe, the groove, even the message.
She played a lot of mashups of Born This Way and Express Yourself in concert, which I enjoyed.
Yeah.
I will say, in the same, it's weird we're bringing it full circle, because at the beginning of the story, we were talking about how Clarence Clemens played on that album by Lady Gaga. And when I spent time with her for that album, the controversy was blooming over this similarity, and she was, you know, she was pretty annoyed by it. She really maintained that she couldn't hear the similarity. I'm just saying, you know, say what you will. She loved Madonna and had mentioned her as an influence, and she felt pretty bad about the whole thing, and felt kind of besieged by it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So who knows? You know?
And for Madonna to play it in concert as a mashup, which is twisting the knife, it was pretty clever.
And that was just the beginning of, like, kind of Twitter fandoms being really intense. Like, that was, what, 2009?
That's a wonderful point. Yeah. So it was 2011.
Yeah.
It was 2011. So it was, if it happened now, events might have moved quicker. You know, Gaga might have been moved
and
to,
there,
you know.
Might have been legal action, too. Especially after Blurred Lines.
I thought you were going to say there might have been fights in the streets between Gaga fans and Madonna fans.
One can only hope.
The Stan Wars finally tear this country apart. But the sort of weaponized fandoms, which, you know, I know you think and write about a lot, mm-hmm. Brittany, is definitely an aspect of all this. And it what's interesting is the Radiohead fandom, which kind of confines itself bookishly to certain old school web forums and Reddit, aren't out on Twitter being like, I am a Radiohead, I will destroy you, Lana fans. It wasn't a war, which is, I guess, a little disappointing just from an entertainment perspective. You want to see that kind of battle.
For sure.
But Lana fans are fierce,
vicious.
Right?
Vicious. Yeah, they were really vicious about it.
And, you know,
a lot of good Radiohead jokes over the weekend.
A lot of them were using, you know, you get into that world. In the world of Stan culture, if people don't know about it, it's been going on for a long time. In fact, again, it all goes, I learned how fierce it could be in 2011 when I made, you know, Gaga was so triumphant in that moment. And I had an unfortunate sentence, which I think stood up at the time, in which I mentioned how influential Gaga was. And I kind of maybe, as they say, threw shade at a couple of other pop artists. I mentioned that Christina Aguilera, you know, made an album that seemed highly influenced by Gaga and actually a few other artists. It was one of those things. It was a perfect storm of just pissing off like 8 fandoms in one sentence. But the Christina Aguilera fans went nuts on me. Went nuts, threatened my life and stuff. And, and then the funny thing is, I hung out with Christina herself and really enjoyed it for a voice cover story a few months later, and she was delightful, and I wrote kind of nice things about it, and then all the fans were completely mollified. They love me. So that's all that's all in the past. I hope by bringing this up again, I don't have more threats to my life from Christina. It was the most intense, you know, sort of problematic fan thing I ever had, and it was a sentence I gave maybe 2 seconds thought
to. I sort of think as a fan base shrinks and gets smaller, the people left are more intense and they get crazier.
For sure.
That's interesting. Yeah, the Christina hive. The Christina hive was fierce. But, I mean, it is Stan culture. People proudly call themselves Stans, and Stans, when I discussed this with Eminem himself, he claimed, this is already a few years ago, he claimed to, at that point, until I told him, to be unaware of the use of Stan as a descriptor that one would self-apply. And he was kind of horrified. It also
came from Nas, too.
Right.
Nas used the word Stan as well.
Right. Well, Nas took it from Eminem's
and
song.
And he's made it what it is.
Yes, right. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Yeah. So people are like, I am like this guy who wrote crazy letters to Eminem and was going to murder people.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a great way to conclude our conversation about Radiohead versus Lana Del Rey, the battle that has not ended yet, even though it might not quite exist. And this has been today's Rolling Stone Music Now. I've been in the studio with Brittany Spanos and Andy Green. We'll be back next week here on Sirius XM's Volume, channel 106 at 1 p.m. Eastern. And in the meantime, be sure to download us as a podcast, subscribe to us as a podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. And as I keep asking, maybe if you like the show, leave some nice reviews on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you next week.